This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, taking you through the next hour on the show that trainers listen to. And we can tell you that is indeed the case. We have heard from so many trainers around the country who say that they enjoy listening to the stories of other trainers and how they got started in the game. Well, we have a good one for you here tonight. We're going to be joined by Lacey Gaudette in just a couple of minutes. And JT, we had the chance to visit with Lacey this past week on our Saturday morning Equine Forum program, which we hosted from Gulfstream Park with the Claiming Crown. And it was such a delight to get a chance to sit down with her, hear her story. And we just did an encapsulized version, but we're going to hear a lot more tonight.
Yeah, it's a great story, very interesting story. And she's been on such a tremendous role lately. And it was good for me personally because I cashed a nice ticket.
The role continued for Lacey, by the way, yes. Saturday at Gulfstream yes. Park with the Claiming Crown. She won the Claiming Crown Tierra. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, it's always good when we have a trainer on Equine Forum and they win because then they want to come back. Yeah. When they lose, they go, oh, those guys are nothing but a jinx.
Mark Cassie swears that we are his good luck charm for Breeders' Cup. He has to come on one of our Breeders' Cup countdown lead-in shows during the week because he did it last year. He won his first Breeders' Cup race. He did it again this year. He wins another Breeders' Cup race. So Mark Cassie's all in.
Oh, well, you know, when you got Mark Cassie, you got to use up a lot of luck because he's got a lot of horses running. So it's a tribute to Lacey that there was any luck left for her. But she came on, she won. It's a good thing.
All right, we're going to get to Lacey momentarily right after we welcome everybody joining us across North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 206 and everyone tuning in worldwide on our website, whether it's on your computer, mobile device, tablet, whatever it might be. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net. And don't forget, right after we finish this show here tonight, a podcast available for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. So without further ado, Lacey Gaudette is indeed our special guest, the trainer of 64 winners in her career, which began in 2007, and she is in the midst of what is by far her best year to date, having saddled 30 winners in 2016, including that huge win in the Claiming Crown Tierra on Saturday. Lacey, thanks for spending some time. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Happy to have you back with us, and congratulations again on that win in the Tierra.
Thank you very much. It was a sigh of relief when we led the first of three over there and got in the winner's circle. So, like I told Gabby in my interview, the rest was just going to be icing on the cake, but it was a very, very good day.
Yeah, it always is a good thing to get off the schneid early, and especially you had a lot of pressure on you taking the horses that far away for those races, and I know the look on your face was, it said everything. It was priceless.
Absolutely. I mean, it was the first time that we had shipped that far, and I know there's plenty of people that did it that weekend and do it every year, but it was the first time for us, and it was going to be very testing to see how the trip went. You know, usually, I mean, clearly, if you have a good trip first time in anything that you do, you're likely to do it again, and so hopefully that trend continues because it was a great first trip to ship that far south.
Well, I'm sure it was. And the name of the horse, we talked about this on the Equine Forum program Saturday as well, Marabia. You can go by about five different ways to say that name. And I'm sure it didn't matter to you when you were in the winner's circle.
Yeah, we had to go back and listen to how Gabby was saying it when she was interviewing us, and I guess we figured we'll stick with that. I didn't pay too much attention to what the announcer called her too. I think he only called her a couple times in the last 70 yards, regardless. So however you say it, it doesn't really matter.
Well, speaking of that post-race interview that you did with your sister, Gabby Gaudette, right after the race, we thought it was such a great interview. We wanted to replay it for you here and kind of take you on a little trip down memory lane. So here's that interview with your sister, Gabby.
Lacey Gaudette in the winner's circle now being interviewed by her sister, Gabby Gaudette. Let's listen in.
Sister Lacey Gaudette sending out Marabi. Can you breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief after that victory today?
Yes, that took a little pressure off of shipping all this way with these horses, so it feels good.
And coming down here with three horses, obviously you have John Jones up next in the Jewel, and then obviously Music Critic in the last race in Emerald. Overall thoughts, feelings on the day, and getting these horses prepared, coming down, winning three, winning your ins in Laurel, and having kind of a full load for this weekend.
They went into their last race as well. They all shipped down here great. They've been training great over this track. And it's just going to be icing on the cake if it gets better from here.
And talk about Marabi. Going back to the break, she obviously broke a little bit slowly and took her a little bit of time to get going. Your overall thoughts throughout the majority of the race, were there any nervous moments?
I was nervous the entire time. Until she swung out, and I was just hoping that she did have enough ground to make up and get there for the win.
All right, well, we got to go to the saddling area to get John Jones ready. Congratulations, Lacey.
Thanks, Kevs.
All right, so first and foremost, you hear that interview back again. What was it like being interviewed by your sister, Gabby?
It was, like she said, it's different. I'm not very used to being interviewed regardless anyways. This is all kind of new for me, but it's a little easier, I guess, when you're looking at your sister and you're that nervous. So, you know, I'm nervous and having that much excitement after, I think it was a little bit of a relief to be able to talk to her about it.
Yeah, because it's got to almost make your head explode. between everything, it's unbelievably cool, and that's great. You have a great voice. Maybe we get you to do some radio shows with us.
Yeah, if you ever get sick of that training career, you can hop over on this side of the fence.
Yeah, someday, maybe someday.
Well, take us through the race. I mean, such a special win for you. What was that? Your second stakes win in your career now?
Yes. Like I said, we liked her going into the race, and it was kind of important to get a jockey on her that when we realized that the rider that had won on her previously wasn't going to be coming out of Maryland and going with us to Florida, it was important to find a rider that I knew would fit her. Like I said, she is a little bit of a difficult filly to ride. She holds her head up awfully high and in your face, and she anticipates everything that's coming to her, and she's a little over dramatic about it. You could tell throughout the whole race, and you know, that was the only thing that I told Jose. I said it doesn't really matter where she is, if she's in front, inside, outside, behind. You just have to really be careful of where she's going to place her head and in your face, so you can see where you're going as well. And there were some hold your breath moments around there. I guess after the race, Gabby told me that I should have confidence in Jose. He knows exactly where he's putting him. And I guess he did. He got out in perfect timing to make up the ground that he needed to win. And she just absolutely had a huge acceleration coming home. And, you know, that's how she ran last time, too. So I guess it is the way that she likes to be ridden.
What attracted you to claim her?
The owners that have her, they look a lot for broodmare prospects. So that was the number one with her back form and some European breeding. They did think that there was some residual value to her there. But they do like to, they like to run their horses as well. So, you know, that was the thought of getting her into the stable, getting her adjusted and seeing how well she could do in this, you know, throughout the fall campaign. And hopefully things keep going the way that they are and we'll be able to run her a little bit more before she gets into the broodmare shed.
She's free now, huh?
Yeah. No. She's four.
No, not three. She's free. F-R-E-E.
Yeah, that's what I thought you did. Yes.
Lacey Gaudette, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Lacey, let's go back to the beginning. I mentioned that you started training horses in 2007. You weren't very old at that time. You weren't very old when you first started to be around horses because you come from a racing family. Take me back to the beginning. Where did the love of horse racing begin for Lacey Gaudette?
Well, it's honestly probably before I could even remember. There's various pictures around the entire house of me, you know, riding the ponies at the racetrack when the morning was done, and of course a few horses that we had on the farm that we would ride. And it was never a question that I wanted to ride. You know, I worked my way up through the mini ponies and the bad ponies that every kid has, and I think my dad bred one horse. We had a quarter horse mare for some reason, and we bred her and had our first horse that we broke together, and I got to learn, you know, from the ground up with her, and then it just progressed from there. And I was in school until I was about 14, and my mom decided to, she did take both me and Gabby out of school, but I liked homeschooling better, so I stuck with it. Gabby did end up going back to high school, but I stayed being homeschooled all the way through high school and until I did some time in community college. But all the while I was, you know, in early mornings, I would work in the barn. I was in the shed row with my parents, and they always worked together. And we had our barn at Bowie, and we always stayed there. And then when Dad had a few clients and started to kind of go places in the summer, we spent a few summers at Monmouth and Delaware Park, and I'd just go with him and, you know, continue doing the schoolwork in the afternoons and between morning workouts and the races. And I had a short career as wanting to be a jockey when I, you know, got excited about galloping horses, and I think Dad's big dream was probably always to have a son that he could turn into a jockey first before a training career. But I don't think he planned on me being 5'9". And so after I turned 17, it was the weight got a little bit hard to manage after I rode some amateur races. So just took a step back and reevaluated the path and decided to really hone my skills in training.
Was there ever a time, Lacey, that you thought, well, maybe I should look outside of horse racing for my chosen career, or was it always about horse racing?
No, it was always about horse racing, and especially the horses. You know, and when things slowed down training about early 20s and things like that, a lot of my friends ventured into the bloodstock and maybe pin hooking and things like that. But no, always geared towards the horse racing. And there's just so many different areas that you can delve into in this sport, and it's great. And you know, unfortunately, it isn't easy to always follow the path that you first venture on, whether it be being a jockey first or being a trainer or, you know, buying and selling horses. You have to have, you know, they always say it's not always what you know, but who you know. And that certainly helps in this game, but it was never a question that it wanted to be in this sport.
Is it the competition that drives you?
Yes. Yeah, you'd like to say that. You know, and my father, I always looked up to my father. So I guess number one, I really want to make him proud. And certainly my mom too, but she was, you know, it's my dad and I have a very close, very special relationship. And, you know, now that he's older and he's retired, he's not in and around the barn so much. So it is a little bit easier for my mom to kind of see that what's progressing. But it was always a big deal to always make sure that I made my dad proud. And certainly now with the things on the upswing, that makes you want to strive to continue doing that well and keep on that level and to keep gaining ground. And it's very hard during the low times. It's very discouraging, and you want to change everything from your feed to your help to the horses in your barn and maybe the location that you're at. And I think we did a good job at sticking with it and doing what we know is best and what we knew that my father started with, the way that we run the operation, things that we knew worked in the past and could still come back around. And now that it is proving that it works, it's fun. You want to keep this going.
How difficult is it for a trainer to persevere and to stick to what they've always done when things turn, as you said, to the low times? How difficult is it to continue on that path, Lacey, and persevere?
It's very hard. Like I said, when I first started with my dad, and then I spent a year outside working for various other trainers and tried to see how they do things, their feed programs, little different things that they adjust their programs to. And then I came home and, you know, finished out the learning process with my parents. And over the time when my father retired and we lost a few clients and lost some of our own horses, you know, my mom always said that there would probably have to be something that we adjusted and changed. And, oh, you know, this guy's doing, you know, training this way, or this person's feeding this feed, and let's change this completely because it's working for them. And we always kind of, when it was either one of us or wavering, we kind of said, listen, that's working for them right now. We could try it, but we know it works with us, and we just have to stick with it. And you know that the biggest thing in this game is to have the right horses and the right clientele to give you those horses and put them in the right spots. And that helps a lot. And we do it for ourselves too. And I told her, you know, we do need to be more aggressive and think things a little bit more through and work out a plan. And we kind of, that would be the only thing that we added a little bit to our operation and being me and my mom since my father retired. But other than that, no, we stuck to what had always worked.
Yeah. It's a lot of times it's the horses, you know, you're so involved with the horses every day and you say, well, this one, you give them a bunch of excuses. They're like your kids, you know? Oh, well, you know, he's just this way or that way or whatever. But when you're not winning, most of the time it's because your horses are slow. And that was pointed out to me one time when I was 0-42 by Gary Jones, who's now in the Hall of Fame. And I was really down one day at Santa Anita, and I knew going into the meet I had a bunch of dinks, you know? And I said to Gary, I said, I got to do something different. He goes, no, you don't. He goes, what you need to do is get rid of all those bums you're training.
Right.
And I did. I went, we had this conversation on the apron at Santa Anita. I went back to my barn. I called a bunch of my clients and I said, okay, these are the best five horses I got. I'm keeping the best five. And the other ones are all going north, south, wherever, to Gary Stevens' dad in Idaho. I got rid of all of them. And it totally changed my outlook and the way that the barn turned around. And that's the key.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the summer before last, Maryland was going through a big transition. And, you know, there are over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years when racetracks started getting the slot revenue and amping up purses and things, there were a lot of people that left Maryland. And we stayed here and we stuck it out. But the summers are dead here, especially when Colonial Downs stopped. And it's we aren't big on shipping. I think it's very hard to sit here and say, okay, we're based in Maryland. We have the summer. We can go wherever we want. Let's go to Charlestown, Parks, Penn National, Delaware, Monmouth. You're on the road all the time. And the operation does lack because one or both people are on the road and then you're tired the next day. So we did, you know, we considered taking a second string to Monmouth for the summer and saying, okay, we'll keep the babies and the layups in Maryland until racing returns. And we'll take the horses that will have an impact and we'll take them to Monmouth and get them as ready as we can and run them in the right spot. And when I presented that to my mom, she says, you know, there's no way that we can do this. We have very light clientele. I don't know if our horses fit there. And we have a lot of horses that don't fit there. And I said, okay, look. And she said, you can't leave me here with all these bad horses to train and, you know, hope that they can scrape by for the summer with shipping around. And I said, okay, here's the deal. We're going to take these five and we're going to take them to Monmouth. And these five to seven, I'm going to find homes for before we leave. And if this is the, you know, the date that I want to be out of here and on my way to Monmouth, by that date, I promise you, these horses that probably are, you know, are at the end of their career that just aren't fast enough and aren't good enough to keep running, we'll find them homes but then I'm out of here. If I can do that, you've got to let me go and you've got to help me get there and make that work. And I really think that she didn't know how determined I was to get to Monmouth Park that summer. So they were gone in, you know, within 3 weeks. And we did, and we loaded up, and I went by myself with the two horses to Monmouth. And the first horse that we ran at the meet, we kind of we've given her some time off, and we laid her in a little bit, and she galloped. And I said, you know, and my mom was just so happy that we came up there that year. And it was our own horse, too. But we had her prepared. We were aggressive. And it made a great showing for the rest of the meet. And, you know, that summer, I think we did gain a few clients. We started with the two horses. By the time we left, we probably left with about 15. And, you know, it started this whole journey that fall and winter. And the next year, we went back to Monmouth. That year, we had more clients, and we went in with about 10. And by the end of the meet, when we left with 25. And it was just those few small correct moves in the right direction that really helped build this.
We have a new handicapping system. Bet the Lacey Gaudet horse the first time it runs at the meeting, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Lacey, your father, who you mentioned the special relationship with him, Eddie, he was a jockey. People may not realize that. He was a jockey before he eventually turned his attention to training, and a very successful trainer at that. He saddled more than 1,700 winners. His career spanned more than five decades. And, of course, among those 1,700 winners, he had three graded stakes victories, too. What was it about your father and watching him as you grew up that made him so successful?
He really never took anything too seriously. And I'm learning that adjustment in the shed row now. He never was worried if help didn't show up, or if the set list got adjusted, or if he came in and we had to, you know, we checked legs and you had to miss with a horse or something. He always adjusted and just kind of kept moving. And it's really funny, because those early years of when I was galloping horses and my dad was training, you know, he'd say certain things about how a horse needed to train. And probably because he was my father, I had, you know, I didn't have any objections to telling him my own opinion. And most of the time I, you know, ended up on the losing end, and we did it his way the majority of the time, because he was the one that knew what he was doing. And I always, you know, in the back of my mind, I was always kind of fighting him or questioning it then, when in my teen years. And now I'll send my sets out of horses, and I'll tell them to do something, or I'll get a reaction from a rider or from a groom, and I'll give the same response that my father gave me, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And I'll just kind of laugh to myself, because, you know, there's so many things now that I do the way that he did that I don't even remember learning, that were just, you know, automatically instilled into me in the time that we spent together. And it's very refreshing to see it kind of come, and not even realizing how easy it is to have the things that he put into me there already.
You know, you mentioned your dad not taking things all that seriously, or too seriously, overly seriously, I guess we'll look at it like that. But as I was getting ready for the show, I read an article about your father, and one of the things it mentioned is that he could be a bit of a jokester, and that was coming from King Leatherberry, who, as we know, got up in his Hall of Fame speech, and all he did was tell jokes. So I can imagine what your dad was like to be around back in the day, as he was kind of telling all these stories. One of the stories that it said he loves to tell is how he almost died four times. Is that true?
I mean, he's, like I said, he's 86 years old and he's still kicking, so I'm sure the number has climbed considerably higher since he said that. But no, I mean, I can remember, you know, as a kid being in the shed row, and he always did horses up. If there was a horse that had a problem or a cut, he never let the groom do it. He did it. And there were numerous times that he'd literally be underneath a horse in between all four legs, and a horse would stomp him on the head or kick him and slice his head wide open, and he'd take a swab of cotton and just put his baseball cap back on and go on about the day. I mean, he never got stitches. One morning anybody who has spent time around my father, one of the main things that everybody remembers about him, and somebody did mention this over the weekend while I was in Gulfstream, are how big his hands are. His hands were just enormous, and he always loved to compare them to somebody else's. But as he aged, he had, you know, I don't know if it was arthritis or carpal tunnel or something like that. But the tendon on his pinky finger started to close up to where he couldn't even put his whole hand in his pocket, you know. And he was leaving early one morning, going down our back porch, and he slipped and fell and sliced that tendon. And he drove to the barn. He never even came back into the house to wake anybody up. And goes to the barn, packs it with Reducene and cotton, and wraps it with a vet wrap. And left it on for about 3 days. And whenever anybody asked him what happened, he said, "Oh, you'll never believe it. I went to 7-Eleven this morning for a coffee, and this guy comes in with a knife to rob the joint. And I tried to stop him, and I tried to grab his arm, and he sliced me with his knife." And I mean, it sure as heck looked like that was exactly what happened. And, you know, he had people fooled with that story forever. But 4 or 5 days later, after when he took that bandage off, he had complete movement of his hand. And we always joked because after that, my mom sent him in to have the surgery on his other hand. And, you know, everybody joked, "Oh, we'll just push him down the steps and save him the having to go to the hospital and get it done." But, no, there's numerous stories that, and, you know, somebody else was telling me, I was standing on the rail at Gulfstream the other day, and somebody told me a story. And if you weren't there to see half of the stories that came out of my dad's mouth, you probably wouldn't believe it, you know, him retelling them. There's quite a few that everybody questions whether it was true or not.
Well, the one story that stood out to me in that article, and I'm going to read you his quote as it appeared in that article years ago, but it was at Philadelphia Park, and he was helping a friend with a horse who was in a trailer. The horse decided that it wanted to go through an exit through the small side door. It crushed your dad, fell on top of him, and they thought, well, he must be dead. And the medics came and said that he was dead, but his good friend, Horace Savoy, and I hope I'm saying that name correctly,
yes,
he was with him, and he said, "He's not dead." Well, they held a mirror under your dad's nose, and they didn't see anything, and they said he was dead. And he thought, well, I really died for a little while, as your dad said in that article. And then Horace saw his lips begin to move and said, "Look." And your dad said, "Then I got up and saddled my horse for the next race."
Yeah, that is absolutely 100% true. I was with them that day, actually. And my dad was always, and I mean, until the day he stopped driving the truck and trailer, he was always the first one to jump in and help somebody. He just had this certain technique that he thought would get any horse on the van. And I can remember him numerous times, you know, getting kicked or nearly getting kicked and still continuing to help these people get, you know, an awful, awful horse on the trailer. But that day in particular, we did. We all went up to the parks together. We shipped into the receiving barn. And I don't remember who the trainer was, but it didn't matter whether he knew them or not. But I had run up to the licensing department to get me a license, and I took the groom with me, and I come back down, and there's an ambulance and a horse trailer, and there's people standing in a circle, and I just start walking up, and I'm like, I can't leave this man for 10 minutes. And at this point, I think he was sitting up, so I realized he was alive. But, you know, so they're telling me the story, but this horse just absolutely did barrel over him out the side, very small side door. And I mean, he just got up, and he was absolutely fine. And it wasn't the first time, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't the last time that he has a story like that.
Well, we'll continue our visit with Lacey Gaudette here on Trainer Talk right after this short commercial break. Stay with us. It is indeed Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This November, nearly 5,000 horses will be offered at breeding stock sales in Lexington, Kentucky. Fasig Tipton has your shortlist. No less than 25 Grade 1 winners or producers, 59 graded stakes winners or producers, 50 selected weanlings, a remarkable 83% black type earners or producers, all in one spectacular evening. One book, one session, one focus. Quality on every page. The world's premier breeding stock event, the November sale at Fasig Tipton.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what if it ain't to the class?
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Defying Gravity is the last of 14 to turn for home. And Daddy's Boo just took the lead, immediately tackled by Be Playful on the outside. Working into the clear is trying to anyway, is on the inside and coming on late is Northern Spur. As they come inside the final furlong, the leader now is Be Playful into the clear. Now here's a run from Seeking Treasure and Marabee finding her best stride. Marabee going 2-1 of the other rivals, surging to the lead. Out wide, Lobelia. Marabee won it. Marabee won it from Lobelia second, then Seeking Treasure third, back fourth. Was Be Playful in 145-2.
Marby getting the victory in the claiming crown Tierra. That was a race you heard right here on HRRN this past Saturday. Marby trained by Lacey Gaudette, who was our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton this evening. Welcome back, Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. And welcoming everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 206, and worldwide, horseracingradio.net. If you do miss any portion of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, head back to our website. You can check out a podcast at your leisure. Well, Lacey, we talked about the relationship you have with your dad. You told some great stories about him and being an old-time trainer, so to speak. But how about your mom? You work closely with your mom to this day. Your mom, Linda, actually began her career with show horses, but spent a lot of time learning from your dad on the thoroughbred side of things. She's also a trainer, as you alluded to in the first half of the show. Talk about that relationship a little bit.
My mom and I have a great relationship too. It's always any mother that has a daughter, they know that you always go through trying times. So my mom and I over the years have definitely butt heads numerous times, but, she worked with my dad. She met my dad when she was 19. She started working with him shortly after that. And they went all over the East Coast, up and down, and they did. They started this operation, this Gaudette Racing, Team Gaudette that we have now. And they did a great job putting it together. And, as great of a trainer as my father was, he wouldn't have been half as successful without my mother behind him, just, keeping everything moving and the bookwork and all the little things that probably the little things that women are better at doing than men. No offense, guys, but those things, you'd rather have to not do anyways. But she does the same thing with me now, and she's great to have in the barn because we bounce things off of each other all the time, and we'll always differ in opinions. And I think that's what kept us from doing the team operation first for a while. It was hard for us. There was an adjustment period with my dad being out of the barn after his retirement, and maybe both of us thinking that we were owed something and we had something of ourselves to prove of ourselves. And like I said, the beginning of the year and the last year and a half, we really said, this has been tough enough trying it to do it our own way. Let's do it our way. And like I said, our way was incorporating my father's way of doing things into it a little bit more. And it's worked. And clearly before, neither one of us could do it on our own, but we're very, very capable of doing it together. So it's a great feeling.
Yeah, you kind of went corporate. You joined your mom's stable and she joined yours, and now you guys have an organization, and that's made a tremendous difference.
Yes, having and yes, having that organization and the you know, and having the business mindset to it has changed everything. And it's just being more on top of things and following through and being at the right place at the right time. And like I said, you know, it was always hard before for us to kind of split stables, and now it's great. Our operation is what we've made it with one of us in each place at each time. It's made it even better.
Well, I know when you took over your dad's operation in 2011, when he finally stepped away, and that was not an easy decision for him, when he finally stepped away and turned the horses over to you and to your mom, you said one of the goals was to continue where he left off and even build upon that. And you wanted to do it through the use of social media and some new technology, which, you know, no offense to your dad, he just wasn't really familiar with.
Right, absolutely. I mean, he didn't know how to answer a cell phone. I mean, we had to, you know, get him all those special ones. I mean, he had every gizmo to keep it attached to him because he lost so many, and it was a running joke around Maryland that everybody else would answer his phone before he did. Eddie, your phone's ringing. So, and he never did grasp the invention of texting. That was always still known as faxing. So, no, there are certain things that will definitely, that modern technology will just add to it.
So what are you doing now to move the operation forward and take it to new levels?
We're very open with the clients. We talk a lot to the clients. My dad had no problem talking, anyways, but, social media does help a lot. We enjoy seeing other people in the sport. We enjoy seeing pictures, and, you know, it's the same reason why people love to listen to the radio. People love to read the magazines. They want to be kept up on the news and what's new in the sport. And clearly your owners and fans, they want to be able to maybe instantaneously see a workout or something funny that their horse does in a stall, and kind of get to know that everyday personality that before we had social media, you didn't get to see these videos of, you know, I have one filly who pulls all of her hay out of her hay rack in the back of her stall. She lays down and will sit there and eat all of her hay for 2 hours. And, you know, the owners probably wouldn't even believe it. Now we can upload a video through a message or even on social media. And, you know, even when we had a horse take down the, I think it was the pick six at Pimlico over the summertime, and, you know, having that, he I don't know, he took down the whole thing and he paid quite a bit. So there was one single ticket. So it was kind of like that, the rainbow pick six or whatever they do at Gulfstream. And, you know, we, through knowing people, we immediately knew who hit it. They said, congratulations. We posted a picture, and it went not only viral with friends and fans, but with handicappers and the betting public. And, you know, it was very cool for people to be able to instantaneously see that and keep up with it and have a, kind of, you know, just have that personal touch to it.
Yeah. The world's getting so much smaller, and, you know, it's great. You can, get information from Hong Kong, from France, from Royal Ascot, wherever you are in the world, and people around the world get information on American racing. And one of the things we've learned since we instituted HRN in Espanol is that the South American fans want all the American information, North American information they can get. And
right.
So you never know who's gonna see you, a horse you trained or whatever, and say, hey, I got to contact that girl. I'd like to send her a couple horses, you know? And it's really cool when you think about it.
Yeah, it's helped us. It's helped us so much. And we enjoy seeing the feedback too. You know, it always gives you, once you see people accepting and interested in the pictures and following your stable, I mean, the first time that we had to do it was with concealed identity, and that was just when Facebook was probably the most popular site out there. And we made him, he was going into the Preakness, and we made him his fan page. And we had people send us, you know, then from that they sent us letters to the racetrack, and they would post all over there wanting to see pictures of him and following him, and knowing, you know, they would give you more feedback on the competition or the weather for the weekend, or, you know, even the next spot for him. And it was very fun to have that fan interaction. And then again, within that, he was a Smarty Jones, and the whole Smarty Jones fan club jumped onto him. And even now that he's retired, everybody wants to still hear about him, see pictures of him after his racing career is done. And the next nice horse that, you know, that I've definitely, the best horse that I've had in my name to train is John Jones, who's a Smarty Jones. And it was just, it was very, I mean, we, you know, with all that being out there, even right after we claimed John Jones and he came into the barn, those Smarty Jones fans started trickling in and saying, "Hey, see, you have another Smarty in the barn." And then, of course, with the winning trend going on, I mean, I didn't even pay attention to it, but Conceal Identity was still in the barn when we had, was still at Laurel when we ran John Jones back in the Mr. Diz and won, and they were in stalls right next to each other. And I was, for some reason, I was standing across the shed row, and I said, I didn't even realize that both of our big time Smarty Jones are right next to each other. So, you know, you take a picture and you put that out there, and they just, and the fans love it. They love to see that stuff.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the name John Jones, and you mentioned the Mr. Diz Stakes, which was your very first stakes victory, the Tierra Stakes this past weekend being stakes win number two. But take me back to that day when John Jones won that stakes race. It was right after you claimed him, and you told us this past week on our Equine Forum show, even though he was a huge long shot, you went into that race with a lot of confidence.
We did. He's training great since he's gotten into the barn, and when we claimed him, that was our goal that was the main pitch, was to say, this is a horse that we would like in the barn. He's a Maryland bred, and this is a nice spot for him. He's bred for the grass. Let's try him there. And if he can handle stakes company, then great. He'll be a nice Maryland bred horse, and there's plenty of Maryland bred stakes coming up in the rest of the year. And if not, he's certainly, at the level that he was running for the 25,000, 35,000, there's a huge incentive with the 30% bonus with Maryland bred. So either way, it didn't look like we could really lose with him, but we didn't really think that we would win this much with him.
Well, he won four races in a row?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's quite a streak. And unfortunately, he didn't win his claiming crown race, but he didn't run badly.
No, he ran great. And like we said, we thought that stretching him out to a mile and eighth might be taking him out of his game a little bit. He's loved the mile at Laurel, and he did stretch out to the mile and eighth at Laurel. But down there with the different track, different kind of company, it maybe was a little bit, you know, where he lacked his finishing kick home. But by no means did he, you know, were we disappointed. He got beat by a favorite and a very nice horse that was returning to the dirt that could, you know, could continue his career on the dirt, make him a different horse, you know, and the horse that was second. But we were thrilled with the run. And like I said, it was our first test. It was a big test for him. You know, we could have found a little bit of a stake race locally around here outside of Maryland, or even an open stakes company in Maryland. But that was our main goal, to make it to the claiming crown, and he didn't disappoint.
Lacey Gaudette, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN. Lacey, I mentioned that this has been a magical year for you, by far the best year of your career, and still building, still growing. You had another opportunity earlier this summer to, well, make some history when you saddled your first horse at Saratoga. You described that as being a dream come true. Why was that moment so special for Lacey Gaudette?
Well, that was our first time, you know, since everything has kind of started going well and we've been accumulating clients, it was our first big reach. You know, we've maybe run some horses over their heads in Maryland just to have them in stake races and things like that. But like I said, we sat down to plan a little bit better and to actually where we run to make an impact. And we definitely packed the van that weekend, and knowing that a win was going to be a stretch, but she was going to get notice up there. And it was a, again, just like I said with going down to Gulfstream, with the exception of my car getting rammed into over the weekend, the trip to Saratoga was wonderful. I packed up early the morning before, just me and my horse. I shipped her up in the trailer myself. We were fortunate enough to ship into a nice barn up there and found some help, and the trip went smooth. She had a great race. She tried her eyeballs out, and she ran a great third. And it was just having that experience of shipping and knowing that everything can go right, just like I said, along the lines of shipping the Gulfstream. Once it was over, okay, we can do this, you know. These steps that we're taking may seem small to other people, but for us, they are small steps in the plan that we have set into motion. And to be able to look back at the end of the day and said, hey, we did it, and we did well, and we'll be able to do it again. That's great, and that's going to be the next step too.
Lacey, what do you enjoy most about being a horse trainer?
I have to say, just coming into the barn early and the first hour that you're in here, and you see how your horses are in the morning. You know, we come in and we give our ulcer medicines and things like that, and check legs and go up and down the barn. And I usually do my, like I said, our set list is still on the small side right now. We have between 25 and 30 horses. So I come in early and I adjust the list to how I think all the horses look in the morning, and we'll change certain things here. But to come in and see how well your horses are eating and how good they feel in the morning, and if they're all standing at the front of their stalls and they're ready to go to work the next day, it's encouraging to know what the future holds. To look at these guys and say, okay, this is the plan that we're doing, and it's following through. This one's training great. This one just breezed great. This horse has changed his attitude and is so much happier since he's been in the barn. And to see those horses, all these horses adjust individually into the program is just, I'd say, the most fulfilling thing.
Yeah, and you never want the groom to say, you got to look at this horse.
Right, that's the worst thing. At any point in the morning, when a groom approaches me other than to look at the set list, I start to hold my breath. But the same thing, we have a great crew with us. My grooms know exactly how we want this shed row run, and they really don't need anything from me. We keep things moving through the morning, and by the end of the morning, they know when to approach me and what things to say and what to look at, and they know how to they have adjusted well since they've gotten into the program, and they like working with us. It's kind of and at the end of the morning, we have a little bit of a meeting, and we go through things like that. So yes, if one of them grabs me in the middle of the morning, then we know it's probably not a good thing.
What's your personality like around the barn? Are you a screamer? Are you quiet? Do you have a lot of interaction with your help during the day?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, I mean, it's all a team. My mom is, I'm not the quietest person. And my mother says I'm, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but my mom is definitely the loudest in the barn. and we joke because we're in the tent barns that they just put up at Laurel. And there's 150 or so stalls divided into, you know, there's a middle and then there's the four sections. And you can always hear my mother's voice, no matter whether you're next to her or at the far end of the barn. You definitely know when she's in the barn. And I always, my grooms, they laugh with me now, but when they first get into the operation, I always tell them, my mom has to say my name 2 to 3 times before she gets a response from me, because she will go, I gallop a lot still and I sit on the pony and my mom is in the shed row all morning, but she will, something will pop into her head and she'll have to just scream it. But if it's in, she'll yell my name and then she'll say what's coming through her mind. But only if it's really important will she say my name twice before she actually wants to make sure that I'm listening to her. Otherwise, she's just kind of talking and nobody really needs to listen until the end of the morning. And we do. We have our different personalities in the barn. And everybody adjusts well. And it's funny because we had my mom doesn't like the hot walkers to wear headphones in the barn, which is, a reasonable request. And we had a young guy start coming to work for us this week, and another hot walker brought him in, and this was his friend. And my mom grabs me and she goes, "Hey, you got to tell that guy he's got to take those headphones out of his ear." And one of our other hot walkers says, "Oh no, don't worry. His friend already told him. Linda doesn't like that. So if he's not listening by now, he may not last long." But the help is in the barn, and they all know the things that work and how we want things done. And there's very little to be told to everybody, and it's good teamwork. They really do get along well, and the horses, it shows in the horses too. When the horses are happy and they love the people that are working on them and that they're surrounded with all day, it shows through.
Lacey, do you feel at times an additional sense of responsibility to be successful because of the precedent that your dad had set when he had so much success training horses, and now it's a family operation, you're doing it all together? Is there an extra sense of responsibility that you feel at times?
Absolutely. You know, like I said, when my mom and I sat down and we decided to pull this thing together as a business, we said, look, this isn't doing us or dad any favors, really. If we can't live up to what he's laid out before us, then maybe this isn't our game. Maybe this isn't what we need to do. Maybe he was the trainer and he is the only reason why this was going so well for so long. And that's where we said, okay, this next year we're going to do this. And we don't want to, and not that dad always had between 20 and 30 horses. He never wanted many more than that. But he also didn't want many less than that. In the winter time, of course, everybody, all the stables kind of slow down. But my mom and I decided about a year and a half, 2 years ago, that we didn't want to be two women that just had 6 to 10 horses of our own and didn't have clients. And, we said we owe more than that to dad. He's taught us better than that. And if it happens to be something where we, where we own something or we keep a few on the side for us, we'll do that. But we'll make our main goal something else, because clearly this isn't going to be it. And it's very refreshing to see how this year has come along, to know that he did teach us right, and that, what he did instill in us is going to work, and that we, being two women, can do this together. And we deserve the opportunity, and that we're going to make sure that we're out there to try our best and to get what and to be able to achieve what we deserve. And it's been very, very nice to see that all unfold this year.
Yeah, tremendously rewarding to have a plan and carry it out and have it end up the way that the end of this year has ended up. I mean, I think it's a real tribute to you and your mom.
Yes. I mean, and the same thing, we made small little goals. And I remember when we had fewer horses, my mom's goal, I mean, there were numbers that seem even kind of funny now. I mean, even last year, to my credit, I think I won 4 or 5 races. The next goal was, my mom always said, okay, well, this year we want to try and win 15 races. And a few weeks ago, it was kind of funny in being able to sit down together and mom say, "Hey, I think we need, I think we'll be able to get to 25 this year." And I said, 25? I said, "No, we're going to get more than 30, mom. That we're, easily. I think that looking in what we have left for the rest of the year, horse wise and spots that we've already laid out, I think that's absolutely attainable." And I'm pretty sure with Murabe on Saturday and the filly that we won with at Laurel on Sunday, I think we're at 30 now, and we have, another month to go, almost another month to go before the end of the year. So it's really nice that before we even get to the end of the timeline, that we've achieved our goals and we can kind of step it up even before the end of it.
Yeah, how about looking ahead to next year and even beyond, Lacey? Have you already started to kind of set some goals and some parameters for what you'd like to accomplish?
Yes, absolutely. We've made a presence in the claiming game this year, which we kind of stepped up to, again, everything kind of dropped off, and we've done a good job, I think, at making a few claims that hopefully are noticeable to some more clientele. And this year we were fortunate to also get some more two-year-olds in the barn. We've always loved two-year-olds. My mom has always done that for ourselves. I credit her at being having a great eye at yearling sales, and she's done very well purchasing for clients that my father trained for, and we've done well on a smaller scale for us. And this year we've gotten a few nice two-year-olds in for other clients. We had one horse win first time out going a mile and a 16th on the grass, which was we thought was a huge achievement, especially for knowing the horse himself. And we have a horse that we own half of. She's a Maryland bred, and she won on Sunday in the last race at Laurel and stretching out. So it's nice to have that different demographic of the two-year-olds and claiming horses, older horses and younger horses. We have one horse that is going to be entered on Saturday. He's a 10-year-old. For the next year, one goal that we've definitely put down is, you know, we got to Saratoga over the summer. Gulfstream was a later goal that we achieved. We'd love to have a presence at Keeneland in the spring. Hopefully it will be with, you know, I would love to say it would probably be with Morave when the grass comes back around in the spring. Hopefully it will be with some nice two-year-olds that we'll have getting into the barn next year, and, you know, some two-year-olds now that will be turning three and have a nice three-year-old campaign. So, just kind of continuing on the same thing. And like you said, those little traveling goals of trying to get to different racetracks and hopefully make an impact on there and keep the numbers growing. We'd like to see the stalls staying full and maybe adding to them if we can.
Well, Lacey, it's been an absolute delight to visit with you here on Trainer Talk tonight and to hear your story and to hear the story of all your success. And we wish you all the best moving forward. The entire team at Team Gaudette, keep it rolling, and we'll look forward to seeing you in the Winner's Circle again soon.
Thank you guys so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to be on with you this entire past week. So thank you guys very much for having me again.
All right, Trainer Lacey Gaudette here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion, head back to our website, check out the podcast. It's all there at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Don't forget, coming up this Saturday on HRN, the Clásico del Caribe on HRN in Espanol. First time they've ever done that. They'll be live in Puerto Rico. That's Roberto Rodriguez, Eloy Vielma. You can learn more by going to hrnenespanol.com. And since this is Pearl Harbor Day, let's not forget all those brave men and women who served our country back then.
Yeah, very important.
For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk.